Blog Talk Radio.
Oh wow, what are we doing today? It's 4:20, man, and I forgot. No, good evening and welcome to Erie House Old Time Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am accompanied by
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And not only do I have a goat with me tonight, but I will be accompanied after one of our shows with another well-researched thing that I made up from Ugg the Caveman.
Researched that I made up. I love it when you say that. And how appropriate that Ugg returns on Flintstones weekend. We got a little some idiot screwed things up last night. I won't mention any names, but his initials are DK. We only had
Dennis
an hour
Kucinich?
Show last night.
Really?
Yeah,
shame on Dennis Kucinich for doing that.
I know that dirty Dennis Kucinich. Why? He used to be the mayor, people's mayor to the Finnish. That was a good song. It was. And we're going back into the caveman days as we continue celebrating. Since you only got an hour last night, we're getting 2 hours tonight. All you had last night was Betty and Barney.
Yeah.
All right. Tonight it's Will.
That'll serve him right for getting off with an hour last night.
That's right. So we'll fill you with more fun and facts with the Flintstones and, of course, Ugg the Caveman returns. I wonder what he'll invent this time.
Yeah, it's something that you might not expect, but you might. You never know.
Yeah. So, I completely misspelled our starlet tonight, Jean Vanderpil. Or Vanderpile.
Because that's how I spelled it in my post, too. Thanks, Dale. You know.
I completely. It's actually Vander is not Van and Der. Der. It's Vander, just V-A-N-D-E-R, and then Pile does not have it. So I apologize to Gene Vanderpil's family, friends, and fans.
That's right.
Yep, and according to Wikipedia, we're going to start with Wilma, I think. She was an American voice actress. Her career spanned many decades, even though she's pretty much only known as Wilma for the most part. But she was Rosie the robot on The Jetsons. And OG on the McGill and Gorilla show. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
She was Winsome Witch on Secret Squirrel. That's a good fact for Gar, who's ailing tonight. He tells us that it's going to be a vault, Quotable Horror, starring the ghoul. It'll start at 8 o'clock, so there'll be a little crossover because we're going to run to 8:30 to make up time for you. Jean, she did a whole bunch of stuff. And she was in a few films, including The Man Called Flintstone. And hey there, it's Yogi Bear, Santa and the Three Bears. So she did a lot of character and cartoon voices. Yay, Wilma.
Yeah, and of course she did plenty of radio as well. I'm not on that page, but maybe midway through I'll have a list of some of the things that she did on radio besides Father's Knows Best, which we will hear tonight right here on Erie House Radio.
I pointed out to Dave yesterday that Wikipedia, when you look somebody up, they don't really cut all the movies, the television stuff. That's great, but they really leave out a vast body of work that some of our people have done on radio. So if you want those facts, you need to tune in here and listen to Dave and the amazing insights he brings us with facts about these old-time radio actors, actresses, and programs.
Oh, no pressure there. Thanks.
It's called me dodging responsibility. But
no problem. No problem.
Yeah, and so she was on Father's Knows Best, eh?
She was. She was the second wife. Of course, Father's Knows Best ran for 7 years on radio before heading over
to
television.
I never know. He got
divorced. Young... Yeah. I think in radio or television, you just kind of woke up the next season and there was a different person there. That's kind of how things happen in radio and television. As we know,
like
with the two Darren.
Yeah.
Yep.
And kind of jumping like from Cloris Leachman to June Lockhart kind of a thing.
That's true. I had forgotten about that. That's a Lassie thing, right?
Yep, it is.
Yep. Just
for some reason, I'm always drawn to Lassie. I love Lassie. And I love Jean Vanderpool. And here she is in Father Knows Best, The Missing Uncle.
Yes. And it comes to us, episode number 53 from November 19th. It was a number episode. Try it again. Episode number 178. Coming to us from November 19th, that part was true, but of 1953.
Mother, why does Daddy insist on Instant Sanka coffee?
Your father says Instant Sanka is 100% pure coffee, and the only instant coffee that lets him sleep. And your father knows best.
It's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as Father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons. Brought to you by Instant Sanka, the delicious coffee that lets you sleep, and Post 40% Brand Flakes. Mother, next time you're choosing a cereal, remember, new Post Brand Flakes give your family all the important keep regular benefits of bran in a cereal with a delicious new Magic Oven flavor. Insist on Post Brand Flakes, the cereal preferred and eaten by far more people than any other Brand Flakes. They're wonderful for breakfast, lunch, or in-between meals. So get Post Brand Flakes this weekend. They're good, and so good for you. You wouldn't think an old straw suitcase full of dolls and doll clothes could upset a whole household, would you? Well, that's exactly what happened at the White Frame House on Maple Street the other day. The suitcase belonged to little Patty Davis, who left it in the Anderson yard, and Kathy brought it in the house for safekeeping. She set it in the hall and made her usual check-in call.
Mommy! Mommy!
But Margaret was next door borrowing some gloves for a party she and Jim were to attend that evening. So Kathy repaired to the kitchen for Operation Peanut Butter Sandwich. Betty was the next to arrive home from school. And as she stood there contemplating the suitcase, young Bud entered the house in his usual delicate fashion.
Creepers, save the pieces.
Oh, hi, Betty. Hey, whose suitcase? Who's here?
I don't know. I just got home myself.
Hey, Mom, who's here?
Shh, don't let them hear you.
Why not? Whoever is here already knows it. Hey, Mom! Is there a name on the suitcase?
I don't see any.
Oh, let's open it and see if we can find a name inside.
No, Bud, that's not polite.
Oh.
Besides, he might catch us.
Is it a he?
It must be. No, she would have an old suitcase like that. It looks like that old straw thing Uncle Hubert used to lug around.
Gosh, you don't suppose it is Uncle Hubert, do you?
Jeepers, I hope not. I'll never forget the last time he was here. It seemed like we were quarantined in with the measles.
We better peek in the suitcase and find out for sure.
Oh, no, Bud. He's bound to walk in here the minute we open it.
Well, I don't think anybody's here right now. Mom! Mom! See, no answer.
Well, in that case, maybe we... Oh, he's probably got it locked. He always locks up everything.
I could call Claude Mesner. He claims he knows how to pick locks.
We can't break in, silly. Wait, I think I hear somebody in the kitchen.
Oh, he's probably out there hitting the icebox.
Run out and see.
Oh, no thanks. I don't want to see him any sooner than I have to.
Well, I'll do it. For all we know, it might not even be him.
I'd rather not find out.
Uncle Hubert! Oh, it's you, Kathy.
Hi, Betty. Want a peanut butter sandwich?
No, thanks.
I think I put too many pickles in it.
Pickles?
You can have it if you want it.
I don't want it. Kathy, have you seen Uncle Hubert?
Uncle Hubert? Is he here?
That's what we're trying to figure out.
When did he get here?
We don't know. We haven't seen him. Was Mother here when you got home?
No. Nobody was.
They've probably gone someplace together. Probably the grocery store. Well, I guess there's no use worrying about it till we see him.
Sure you don't want this sandwich?
No.
Maybe if I put some jelly in it, that might have sort of sweetened up the pickles.
Oh, hello, Angel.
Hi, Mommy. Where's Uncle Hubert?
Uncle Hubert? What are you talking about?
Didn't you know Uncle Hubert is here?
Here? Oh, no, you're joking.
Betty said he was here.
Oh, good heavens. Why does he always have to pop in without a word of warning? Where is he, in the living room?
I don't know. Betty was out here looking for him a minute ago.
Oh, dear. Well, I'd better go in and see what's happened.
Can I have a cookie, Mommy?
I don't care. Our meals will be all mixed up now anyway. I thought things were going along a little too smoothly lately.
Oh, hi, Mom. You home?
Yes, I'm home. Where's Uncle Hubert?
I don't know. We thought he was with you.
No, I haven't even seen him. As a matter of fact, I didn't know he was here until a few minutes ago.
Well, I can't find him upstairs anywhere. Oh, hello, Mother. Is he with you?
No, I haven't been here. I was over at Mrs. Davis's trying to borrow some black gloves to wear to the Stewart's party tonight. Didn't Uncle Hubert say where he was going?
No, he didn't say. He just put his suitcase down there and left.
He was gone when we got home.
Oh, dear. He must have arrived when I was next door. Did Kathy see him?
Margaret, I'm home.
Well, what have we got here? A convention?
Dad.
Father, guess what?
Dad, look at that suitcase.
Huh? Well, what about it?
Uncle Hubert.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, I was feeling so good tonight, too. Where is he?
We don't know. He arrived when I was at the Davison's.
So he left his suitcase here and went out.
Oh, me. He's probably sitting in some restaurant, pouting. I suppose I'd better go out and start looking for him. Oh, by the way, Margaret, here's a little present for you. You won't have any use for it now, though.
What is it, Jim?
A corsage to wear to the party tonight.
Ah. Oh.
You still wear one of those, Mom?
I said corsage, but... Flowers, you know.
Oh.
Oh, it's beautiful, dear. But I guess you're right. We can't go now.
Well, I can't be here. Joe and I are going to write a song tonight.
Write a song?
Joe found an ad in a magazine, and it says that all we have to do is write the words, and they'll write the music for it, and we'll earn big money overnight.
Well, that's fine, but I think you'd better stick around here tonight.
Well, gee, Dad, don't you want me to earn big money?
Well, certainly, but...
Overnight?
But you know how disappointed Uncle Hubert will be if we're not all here. He always wants to have everyone around him.
Dad, this is the chance of a lifetime. All we have to do is send in $2 with our words to cover the cost of handling. And we earn big money.
Look, Bud, that's just a...
Where else can you get a deal like that?
Bud, you can't write a song.
Oh, no? We already got a great title. How do you like this? I'm gonna clutch you in my iron claw machine, baby. It's a ballad.
How cornball can you get?
Well, we'd better wind up this musical discussion and figure out a place for Uncle Hubert to sleep. Bud.
Oh, no, not my room again.
I don't know where else to put him.
Oh, God.
You can make out on the Davenport all right, can't you, Bud?
I keep rolling off. By morning, I'm old bruised.
Maybe that'll give you a new title for a song. Oh, how blue I am.
Oh, get lost.
Bud, why don't you take a suitcase up to your room, and I'll get some sheets and change the bed.
Just look at that suitcase. It looks even worse than the last time he was here. As long as the old one holds together, he wouldn't put out a nickel for a new one.
Come on, Bud, take the suitcase upstairs.
Okay.
You'd better take some of your clothes out of your closet and put them in the hall closet so Uncle Hubert will have more room.
More room for what, that one suit he wears? I'll get it.
No, I'll get it. It's probably Uncle Hubert. He's probably gotten into a fight with a streetcar conductor over the price of the fare. I'm coming. Hello? Who? Oh, yes, just a minute. I'll call her.
For me?
No, Kathy. Is she here?
Out in the kitchen. Kathy!
Somebody call me?
You're wanted on the phone, shrimp boat.
I bet it's Patty worrying about her dolls and stuff. Hello? Oh, yeah, I found them, Patty. I brought them in the house. Huh? Just a minute. Daddy, can I take Patty's dolls over to her?
Not now, kitten. You'd better be here when Uncle Hubert gets back.
Oh, gee. Hello, Patty? No, I can't. Well, I'll take good care of them. I'll put them in my room. Okay, Patty, goodbye. Gee, Daddy, I don't see why I can't go... Hey, where's the suitcase?
Bud took it upstairs.
Oh, well, good.
You better run upstairs, too, and get cleaned up.
That's just where I'm going. Oh, say, Daddy, when Uncle Hubert gets here, will you do me a favor?
Well, that depends on what it is, kitten.
Well, every time he sees me, he always says, ah, I'll bet here's a little girl who likes candy.
Well, you like candy all right, don't you?
Sure, but he never gives me any.
Oh.
Ask him to put up or shut up.
Kathy, it's not very nice to say shut up.
All right, then ask him to put up.
I'll see what I can do, kitten. But you better get upstairs now.
Yeah, I better take care of those dolls. Hi, Bud. Where'd you put the suitcase?
In my room. Dad!
Yes, Bud?
Will you grab some of these clothes before I trip? I'm losing my corduroy pants.
Well, keep your shirt on. I'll help you.
Father?
Why didn't you leave your clothes on the hangers? It would have been a lot easier.
They weren't on hangers. It was easier just to pick them up off the floor this way.
Oh, fine. Open the closet door for us, will you, Betty? Thank you.
Father.
Bud, don't throw your clothes on the floor.
Oh, I hate to get those hanger marks in them. Makes them look so untidy.
Father, I still don't think it's right for you and Mother to stay home tonight.
What else can we do?
Just go. It's Uncle Hubert's fault for not letting us know he was coming. Besides, you and Mother don't get to go out very often, and you deserve to have a little fun.
Well, thanks, Princess. That's very thoughtful, but...
Besides, I invited Ralph over tonight because I thought we'd be alone.
Oh, I see.
Except for Kathy, of course.
Dad, can't I go over to Joe's?
Now, look, kids, to be honest, I'm not any happier than you are about Uncle Hubert. But there's nothing we can do about it. We're his relatives, and he wants to visit us.
Doesn't he have any friends he could visit?
Not in Springfield, he doesn't. And besides, wait a minute. He does have a friend here. Old Vess Kittner.
Vess Kittner?
Mm-hmm.
You mean that old fellow who sits on the bench in front of the city hall all day long?
Sure. Don't you remember the last time Uncle Hubert was here, he spent a day over at Vess Kittner's place.
How come they know each other?
Oh, they both come from Dubuque, Iowa, originally. I wonder if Uncle Hubert would like to see his old friend again.
Tonight?
Tonight would be a fine time.
Yeah.
I believe I'll just give Vess a call and let him know his old pal is in town.
Now you're cooking, Dad. Get to the phone.
Well, don't push me.
I'll look up the number, Father. How's that spelled? K-I-T-N-E-R?
Two T's, I think. Maybe that's where Uncle Hubert is right now.
Yes, here it is. Vessner L. Kittner, 8691.
He's already there. It'll make it easier.
Betty, how's this for a song?
Not now, Bud.
Let's kiss and hug down by the old cut-rate drug.
Oh, no.
Well, it rhymes, doesn't it?
Hello, Mr. Kittner? Is this Beth Kittner? Well, this is Jim Anderson. Jim Anderson. I'm a relative of Hubert Clark.
Is he there?
That's right. Oh, he's fine. As a matter of fact, he's in town, and I know he'd like to get together with you sometime.
Not sometime, tonight.
Well, that's fine, Mr. Kittner. What are you doing tonight?
Now you're pitching, Dad.
Well, good. Oh, he's not here right now, but as soon as he gets back, What? Well, now, wait a minute, Mr. Kittner. What I meant was... Mr. Kittner, hello? 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 Oh, me.
What's the matter, Dad?
Isn't he going to get together with Uncle Hubert tonight?
Yeah, he's going to get together with him tonight, all right. But he's coming over here to do it.
Over here?
Now we're stuck with both of them.
Well, it looks like the rumors flying around the Anderson household are causing no end of complications. But, Mother, here are some facts that will make your life much simpler.
I'm sure you've heard that bran is good for your family because it provides important keep-regular benefits. Perhaps you've even tried serving bran, but found that the family didn't especially like its taste. Well, they'll like it now. Post 40% bran flakes have a new magic oven flavor. A crisper texture that's downright delicious. Yes, bran flakes by Post taste so good, they're preferred and eaten by far more people than any other bran flakes. Serving Post bran flakes is one way to make sure your family enjoys their keep regular benefits in a delicious cereal. Remember,
for goodness sake, eat Post bran flakes.
Post bran flakes are bought by far more people than any other bran flakes. So this weekend, get Post bran flakes and start enjoying them for breakfast, for lunch, and before bedtime snacks. They're good and so good for you.
Yo, just strap a bucket around your ears and chow down. That's what I say.
Sure, good for breakfast, lunch, or a late night snack. What happened to dinner?
That's right. Put it on the feed. I've had cereal for dinner, especially when I was a kid. I loved it.
Oh, yeah. Look forward to it.
Yep.
Say, as far as some of her radio, Jean goes back to 1939 when she first appeared on Lux Radio Theater.
Gee.
Worked her way up to, these are credited and recordings that are out there. Several Cavalcades of America, four Alan Young shows, Family Theater, two more Lux Radio Theaters, about three episodes of Fibbergy and Molly, another Family Theater, several Wild Bill Hickoks, and, of course, Father Knows Best, which is what we're listening to tonight. Her last credited one was in 1954 on radio with the show Meet Mr. McNulty.
I wasn't even aware of that show, so I'll have to look that one up.
Hmm. I'll be
hanged. Well, I hope not.
I already am. Never mind. Stop.
So, where is this uncle at anyway? I mean, this is a strange tale. You're all worked up about this uncle that they haven't seen yet.
Look, I have this terrible feeling he's dead. No.
Did they look in the closet or the trunk of the car?
Something smells funny in the trunk. Coming from the trunk. I don't know what it is.
I wasn't there at the time.
What's his name? It's not Uncle Petrie. It's, geez, I'm stuck on Lassie. Uncle Pedro. I don't know. We'll find out as we wrap up. The missing uncle.
All right, Wilma.
Laura just showed you how an innocent little suitcase full of dolls deceived the Andersons into thinking Uncle Hubert had come to visit them, which meant they would all have to give up their plans for the evening. Jim's plan to send Uncle Hubert over to an old friend's house backfired when the friend decided to come over there to see Hubert. While most of the Andersons were in the kitchen trying to think up a new plan, Kathy went upstairs and moved the suitcase from Bud's room to her room, and then went into the bathroom to take a bath. At this point, Bud went up to his room to get a few more of his belongings and discovered the suitcase switch, and then tiptoed downstairs to report the news, like this.
Hey, Mom, Dad, I got some news.
That kid's going to break right through those stairs someday.
Hey, Dad, he's here.
Who is? Bess Kettner?
Uncle Hubert.
Well, thank goodness. Now I don't have to go out and try to find him.
Did he say how long he was going
to
stay?
Oh, I didn't get to see him. He's taking a bath. At least I think he is. The bathroom door's locked, and I heard a lot of splashing in there.
I hope he doesn't let the tub run over again this time.
He doesn't want to sleep in my room, though, because he moved his suitcase into Betty and Kathy's room.
In our room?
Oh, dear, I wish he wasn't so fussy. Nothing ever suits him.
Well, he can't stay in our room.
What we'll have to do is put some clean sheets on Betty's bed. Betty can sleep in Bud's room, and then we'll move Kathy's bed into our room.
I'm not going to do it. I don't want to sleep in Bud's room.
Betty, this is an emergency. We'll all just have to make the best of it.
Oh, poo.
I don't want to sleep down on the Davenport. Let me have my room and let Betty sleep down here.
I'm not going to sleep downstairs.
Well, wait a minute. Bud can have his room. Betty, you can sleep with me, and Jim, you sleep on the Davenport.
Now, wait a minute.
We'll all just have to make the best of it, Father.
I'm too long for the Davenport. Takes me an hour and a half to get straightened out again in the morning.
Come on, Betty. We'd better get upstairs and change those sheets.
Okay.
Jim, you and Bud had better come up and move Kathy's bed.
Okay. Come on, Bud.
I'm coming.
We'd better get things squared around before our new guest, Bess Kittner, gets here.
I don't know why Uncle Hubert had to pick this time for a visit.
Shh, he'll hear you. He's right there in the bathroom.
I don't care.
Betty, smooth out the wrinkles in the sheet on your side there.
Oh, let him straighten out the wrinkles himself. He's an old troublemaker, that's what he is.
Oh, now, Betty.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I sure we should get my name straight this time. Last time he was here, he kept calling me Dub.
That might not have been a mistake.
Well, well, so this is little Dub. Dub sure got his mother's cheekbones. You got your mother's cheekbones, Dub.
He'll hear you, Dub. Grab hold of the end of the bed there, Dub, and let's get it moved.
Okay. I ought to be over at Joe's writing a song. That's what I ought to be doing.
Watch out, Bud. Don't hit the door.
Sorry.
Easy, Bud. Tip it more. That's it.
Kathy ought to be doing this. It's her bed.
Where is Kathy anyway?
I don't know. I told her to take a bath and clean up, but she probably went outside again when she couldn't get in the bathroom.
Watch where you're going there, Bud.
Oh, I bet that's Ralph. He said he might come for dinner. I'll go down. I'm going to tell him to go home, and it'd be too embarrassing to have him stay.
Okay, Bud, set her down.
Dad, couldn't I go over to Joe's just long enough to knock out half a song?
No, Bud.
That would at least give me a part interest in it.
Look, Bud, we've been over this 1,000 times.
You don't want to have to support me all your life, do you?
Father! Father!
I'm losing a fortune sticking around here.
Father, it's Mr. Kittner.
Already? What's he planning to do, have dinner with us?
I'd better get downstairs and start cooking. Bud, go out and see if you can find Kathy.
Hurry up, Father. Come down and talk to him.
All right, I'm coming.
He's in the living room. He brought a whole lot of old newspaper clippings to show Uncle Hubert.
I'll bet that'll be interesting.
Betty, would you go out in the kitchen and start peeling some potatoes? I'll be right down.
Okay.
Well, hello there, Mr. Kittner.
Well, howdy, howdy.
I'm Mr. Anderson.
Sure, I know you. I'd know you anywhere, Mr. Albertson. Where's old Hugh?
Well, old Hube is upstairs bathing. He'll be down shortly, I hope.
Yes, sir. I used to know old Hube back in Dubuque, Iowa.
Yes, I know.
Hube and me was boys together there. Young lads used to ride around on the back end of Charlie Gettler's feed wagon. Where is old Hube?
I said he's upstairs. He'll be down.
I got a few clippings here, various news items. Old Hube will get a kick out of them. He sure liked them the last time he was here. I've saved some of these for over 40 years. You want to look them over?
I think old Hube will be down pretty soon.
Yeah. Him and me grew up together in Dubuque, Iowa.
Yes, I know.
As boys.
Well, that's the best way.
Yeah. Young lads together we was. Hey, that was in Dubuque.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
In Dubuque, Iowa.
I see.
Yeah, that's where I first knew old Hugh. Him and me was boys there.
Would you excuse me a minute, Mr. Kittner? I'll go see how old Hugh's getting along.
Yeah, well, tell him I got some various news clippings. The Dubuque Bugle. And hey, most of them are out of the Bugle.
I'll tell him. Margaret. Where are you, Margaret?
Out in the kitchen, dear.
Oh.
How are you and Mr. Kittner getting along?
Well, he's from Dubuque. I found that out. Oh, brother, are we in for a gay little evening?
Well, it doesn't matter much what happens now. The evening's ruined anyway.
I think it's a shame you're not getting to go to that party. Just another shame.
Well, it would have been nice.
I can't find Kathy anyplace. She's probably over at Patty's.
I told her not to go over there, too.
Dad, can I go over to Joe's? I just got to.
Bud, we might as well face it. That old fuddy-duddy has wrecked everything for us.
He certainly picked a fine time for a visit, I'll say that.
Now, wait a minute. What's the matter with us, anyway? This is no way to be talking about anyone.
Well, I don't care.
I'm as guilty as anyone here. But let's look at it from Uncle Hubert's point of view. He's probably lonely and decided this visit would be a pretty nice thing.
Well, why didn't he let us know?
I don't know. Probably never occurred to him. But instead of sitting around mooning, we ought to be thinking up ways to make Uncle Hubert's visit a happy one. And forget our own little selfish desires.
Well, I guess you're right. I guess we should all feel a little ashamed of ourselves.
Well, I don't think Joe is too much of a guy to write a song with anyway. His ideas are nowhere.
I'll bet Uncle Hubert would like a nice, fluffy banana cream pie.
I could make some of those blueberry muffins.
If you want a hit song, you've got to get something sentimental, like We Kissed in the Moonlight on the Old Catfish Barge.
Another ballad, I presume.
Well, you look fine, but where have you been?
Upstairs, taking a bath and cleaning up like you told me to.
Taking a bath? Well, where's Uncle Hubert?
I don't know. I didn't see him. Is he the one who stole my bed?
Wait a minute. How could Kathy have been upstairs in both the bathroom and her room and not have seen Uncle Hubert?
Maybe he moved his suitcase back into my room.
Was it still in our room, Kathy?
No. The only suitcase in there is that one of Patty's with her dolls in it.
Oh, fine. After we went to all the bother of changing the bed, now he decides... Wait a minute. What suitcase are you talking about, Kathy?
That old straw one.
The one that was down here in the hall?
Uh-huh.
Oh, creepers. We thought it was Uncle Hubert.
Well, for gosh sakes, why didn't you make sure before you went around telling everybody?
I didn't tell anybody.
Well, somebody did.
I heard it from Kathy, I think.
I heard Bud and Betty talking about it.
Well, by George, this ought to teach us all a good lesson not to jump at conclusions and spread rumors.
Well, what I want to know is, where is Uncle Hubert's suitcase? Didn't he bring one?
Here, stupid.
He isn't. Oh, boy, now I can go over to Joe's and make big money.
Yes, and we can go to the party.
Hey, what in tarnation is going on? Where the dickens is old Hube?
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Kittner, that's a long story.
Well, I ain't got time to hear it. I got to meet a friend of mine down in front of the city hall. You tell Hube I couldn't wait.
Okay,
You might give him these news items, though. Let him look them over. They're from the Dubuque Bugle.
I'll give them to him, Mr. Kittner.
Oh, much obliged. So long.
So long.
Jim, just how are you going to give Uncle Hubert the items when he's not even here?
Oh, I'll put them in the letter I'm going to write Uncle Hubert, thanking him.
Thanking him? What for?
Well, any man who can teach us the lesson he has today deserves our undying gratitude. Let's see now. Dear Uncle Hubert.
Hello, Jerry Marshall again. Say, I wonder how many of you have thought about what a really rewarding experience a good cup of coffee is. Yep, it's a fact. Nothing picks up lagging spirits faster than a steaming cup of coffee. Of course, for many people, the trouble with coffee is it picks you up and keeps you up night after sleepless night. That's because ordinary coffee contains caffeine. Now, if you drink instant Sanka coffee, you can be sure of deep-down coffee enjoyment and get your sleep, too. You see, 97% of the caffeine has been removed from instant Sanka. It can't keep you awake. And instant Sanka is all pure coffee with an extra rich flavor that makes each cup a really rewarding experience. Buy the economy-sized jar of instant Sanka coffee. See how good it is, how well it lets you sleep.
Well, the phantom visit of Uncle Hubert came to a sudden end, but not without leaving an indelible mark on the family in the white frame house on Maple Street. Like this.
Hurry up and finish setting the table, Betty. Wait a minute. Haven't you put on too many plates? 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes.
Golly, I did. I guess I was thinking about Uncle Hubert.
Isn't there some superstition about putting on an extra plate by mistake? It means you're going to have a visitor, doesn't it?
You don't suppose Uncle Hubert is coming, do you?
Well, let's not start jumping at another conclusion.
You know, it's a funny thing, but I feel as though he's still here, on his way or something.
Me too, Mother.
Well, we've made this mistake once tonight. Isn't that in the... What was that?
That's him, Father. I feel it in my bones.
Oh, it couldn't be. Probably just the wind. Wait a minute. I'm sure I hear somebody walking around there.
Hello?
Oh, my gosh. Uncle Hubert?
No, it's just me.
Well, Mr. Kittner.
Hey, did I leave a batch of news clippings around here? I don't want to lose them. They're from the Dubuque Bugle.
Join us again next week when we'll be back with Father Knows Best, starring Robert Young as Jim Anderson. Until then, good night and good luck from the makers of Post 40% Bran Flakes, the cereal preferred and eaten by far more people than any other Bran Flakes, and Instant Sanka, the delicious coffee that lets you sleep. In our cast were Helen Strom as Kathy, Gene Vanderpyle, Rhoda Williams, Ted Donaldson, and Parley Bear. Calcium is essential to a child's growth.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Calcium helps build strong, sturdy bones.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Calcium helps build good, strong teeth.
And now there's calcium in hot wheat meal.
Yes, a one-ounce serving contains one-third of your daily calcium needs. Serve your children calcium-enriched post-wheat meal. Kids love that nut-like flavor. Wheat meal cooks instantly. Get new post wheat meal with more calcium than any of the cereal, hot or cold. Father Knows Best, based on characters created by Ed James, was transcribed in Hollywood and written by Paul West and Roswell Rogers. This is Bill Foreman speaking.
Tonight's play...
Unexpectedly, Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story not written by Gar.
Okay.
Yes, with apologies to Gar. If you have a skeleton in your closet, just hope it isn't your Uncle Hubert.
Yes.
Ooh, that man.
Ooh, that man.
Also, another moral to be learned from this. Well, down, Dino.
That was Pal.
Another lesson to be learned. Never jump to conclusions. The leap may be bigger than you think. There you go. Thanks, Barney.
Barney liked it, yeah.
Barney liked it. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and our sponsor this weekend, of course, is Glockenspiel. Let's give them a little shout-out there.
Make your hobby happy. Keep your hobby happy. When he's a little chubby, he's the happy pappy with Glockenspiel.
Or Glockenspiel, that's what it is. It's nice to know when you know your sponsor's name. Glockenspiel.
Yeah, yeah. Ah. Yeah, you make a few more bucks that way, yeah.
Yeah. It's always good if you know who's paying the bills. I don't know. Yeah, so that was Gene. I could barely hear just a tad of Wilma in there, but not very much.
I could hear, but again, she played a lot of different roles on radio, and so... probably the Betty or the Wilma was probably closer to her real voice.
Yep. I love it when she was talking to the kid, Betty. It was just killing me. Go ahead, Betty.
Yeah.
Go do this, Betty. Go get the luggage or whatever. Yeah.
Yep,
it was creepy.
Yep.
It was creepy.
Well, you know, these guys all came across with each other. They worked with each other different places, and I think that makes it cool that they all kind of converge together here. Because, you know, we hear, last night we heard on the Mel Blanc show, we heard Alan Reed there and the B. Benadryl was on there also.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the three of them were on that particular episode. And Burns and Allen, when she was the neighbor, Mel Blanc was the happy postman. So... there are many times that I think their paths crossed, but never as lengthy as it did for the Flintstones.
Yeah. Now, Gene Vanderpil was actually the last surviving original cast member when she passed away on April 10th of 1999.
Wow.
Yeah. And another interesting fact, when they did the live-action version, she got a cameo appearance in the conga line. She was right behind Dino. Played
Mrs. Okay.
I don't know what it was, but and her last appearance doing anything was on the Weird Al show in 1997.
Was that
a good way to go? That'd be
90...
a good way to go out, you know?
Yeah. I'm telling you, that would be fun. And probably he had her on because of the significance of her being Wilma Flintstone, who were originally, they were supposed to be the Flagstones. That was the original name for the family.
The Flagstones.
But it got changed because, you know who else was Flagstone at the time? Well, it was High and Lois Flagstone from the comic strips. And they thought that there might be some confusion between the two, so they changed it from Flagstones to Flintstones.
There you go. And a legend was born.
And because of the similarities, Jackie Gleason almost tried to sue the Flintstones for stealing their thing, although it was based on it somewhat. It was kind of based on it, but it wasn't really the Honeymooners.
No.
And here's one of the things they actually, Joe Barbera, he was saying how they actually hired one of the writers from the Honeymooners. Actually, he did nothing because Flintstones was about sight gags and stuff and the silly names and stuff. It wasn't that way on the Honeymooners. And so basically he just wrote kind of dialogue and waited for Art Carney to do his magic. And
yeah.
So the writer that he paid big bucks to from the Honeymooners really didn't do them any good at all.
I'll be darned. That's something. Yeah. And did anybody have all the cool Flintstone stuff? Not you know, I mean, that stuff's been going on for years. But I mean the real early stuff. I remember that they had their likenesses on jars of jelly, Welch's. Because they also pimped Welch's grape juice, if I'm not mistaken.
They did. Yes, they did.
It wasn't all about the Winstons, baby.
Yeah, that's right. They did that. Yep. And merchandising, I guess they were on they were on the fact that they were going to have a baby. Wilma and Fred were going to have a baby. And so, like, one of the guys that had something to do with the show was in New York, and he called down and said, so I hear you're going to have that they're going to have a baby. And they said, well, yeah, is it going to be a boy or a girl? I said, well, it's going to be a boy. They said, oh, that's too bad. I've got the owner of Ideal in here. He had this great markup for a girl baby Flintstone and had the marketing all ready to go for it. He said, that's what I said. They're having a girl. So that's why they became, that's how they got Pebbles, because it was supposed to be a boy.
I'll be darned.
And the great Kazoo had nothing to do with that one.
No,
he had
nothing to do with it. Yeah, we don't have Harvey Korman tonight, unfortunately, but
no,
that's
we
okay.
Don't.
Well, we
I don't
do.
Harvey
you...
Korman did. Yeah, I don't think he did really much of any radio. I haven't been able to find any Harvey Korman radio.
Nah, but he did a few cartoon voices. Yeah.
Right, but he obviously did cartoon, and it's funny because although I'd heard of Flintstone for years, it took me a while of watching the Carol Burnett show to realize, wait a minute, that's the Great Kazoo.
Yeah, same here. I didn't, you know, you don't realize it when you're a kid and you put it all together, but especially folks like us that are into all this media, then you start going, hey, I know that voice. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait just a minute there. Same with our next actor, Mr. Alan Reed.
Yeah, all over the place. Actually used his original name of Teddy, I forget what his last name was, but they would only put him in comic roles, so that's when he came up with the name that he used for the rest of his career, because he would go take after some dramatic roles with things like that. And even though his dramatic roles usually had some kind of fun to them, like when he was Shrevey, for a while on the cab driver on The Shadow. So, you know,
yeah.
There was some serious roles, but he never would have got that if he had stayed the same and he subbed for Stoop Nagel and Bud and things like that, some early vaudeville guys. He was very young or going into the radio. We'll bring that up sometime because I have an interview with him and Chuck Shade that was really interesting to listen to. So when it comes up time for his birthday, we'll have to do night for just for him or a weekend just for him because he was in so much radio. And even like we have tonight here, he was on a total of two CBS Radio Mystery Theaters. And I listened to the two of them, and I chose this one because he played two separate roles in the show.
Yeah.
I think one in the first act, and then the other one came by in the, I think, in second and third act. So it was just, he wasn't the main character, but he was like two different roles in this particular episode, like many of the actors did in the Radio Mystery Theater. They took on more than one role to help save a wee bit of cash on the production.
Yep. Yeah, we've heard Alan Reed all over the place. He's been on Fred Allen, The Shadow, as Chester Riley's boss in Life of Riley. He was Pasquale in Life of Luigi. I love that role. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show, and also on Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
He also was the original daddy in Baby Schnooks and Daddy. But when the show moved, I think it moved to New York, where Fanny Bryce was spending more of her time on Broadway and such, or perhaps when she moved from New York. Either way, it moved to the coast, and Alan Reed didn't make the move with it. That's when Hanley Stafford took over the job as daddy. But the original daddy in Baby Schnooks and Daddy was the one in, it was him. It's crazy.
Well, let's give old Fred Alan Reed a listen. We got a CBS Radio Mystery Theater for you. This one's entitled, interestingly, Sister of Death. Ooh.
It is episode 157 and comes to us from October 7th of 1970 and for...
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall, and it's time once again for that voyage we take together through those dark and hidden recesses of our own imagination. A philosopher tells us that by an accident of fortune, a man may rule the world for a time, but by virtue of love, he may rule the world forever. Love. There seems to be so much love all around us. It appears to grow wild, like some exotic plant in a tropical jungle. And yet, with so much love everywhere, why are so few of us kings?
No. No, I don't paint anymore.
But you're such a fine artist, you should.
No. No, you see, I put someone down on canvas. And it's not just his likeness, it's also...
Yes, it's also...
It's also his personality. And so he will convey to the viewer some of his innermost secrets.
I don't believe that's possible.
Yes, yes. The canvas will not conceal any of his secrets. It will betray everything, even if he has committed murder. Now, shall I paint your portrait?
No. Oh, no.
Our mystery drama, Sister of Death, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars K.T. Stevens. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule. I'll be back shortly with Act One. If a stranger were to stop you on the street and say, "Here, for you, is a $100 bill. Take it. It's yours. No strings attached." What would your instinctive reaction be? Would you reply, "How generous. A thousand thanks"? Probably not. You would more likely say, "What's in it for you?" Or, "What are you selling?" Or, "Need it before I call a cop." And with good reason. So many of us have become rather sharp-nosed and narrow-eyed. But here and there is still the occasional optimist, the rare believer in the goodness of man, the exceptional, kind-hearted, trusting soul who simply refuses to recognize evil. You're about to meet one of them. She's young and pretty.
Oh, I got $70, Vince. $70. Who'll give me 75? 75? Do I hear 75? Oh, ladies and gentlemen, this magnificent portrait in oils. It cannot be sold for $75. It can only be stolen.
$72.50.
A young lady with the courage of an ancient Amazon warrior.
Do you accept my bid?
Do I accept your bid? $72.50, ladies and gentlemen. Shall you stand by and see the crime of the century perpetrated? Will no one say 75?
75.
Oh, dear lady, you must not bid against yourself.
Oh.
Very well, my friends. Let it be on your own consciences. 72.50 once. 72.50 twice. Sold. Sold for 72.50.
Do you mean it's mine?
Yes, dear lady, it's yours. It's all yours.
What is this fantastic bargain, Anita?
Oh, Tilly,
Just wait till you see it.
Oh, where is it?
I even knew exactly where I wanted to hang it.
Hang it? Oh, is it a picture, Anita?
Oh, nobody can ever keep a secret from you.
What kind of picture is it?
Tilly, it's the buy of the century.
Who painted it?
Well, it wasn't anyone you might have heard of. It's Corral.
Corral?
Mm-hmm. He signs his name in big letters.
Is his first name Sebastian?
Sebastian? How did you know?
Sebastian Corral.
Oh, you heard of him. You actually heard of him.
Anita, where's the painting?
You'll never guess.
Anita, let me look at the painting.
Come upstairs. I put it in the bedroom. It just seemed to belong there.
$72.50 for a Sebastian Corral.
And you never even heard of him, which means he's not just some unknown.
So that's where all that promise ended up.
Et voila. Behold, my magnificent painting. Well, say something. The minute I saw this painting, I knew I'd have to buy it. Do you know why? Because I felt I knew this girl. Oh, it's ridiculous. I never saw her before in my life, but I feel we're friends. She looks as if she's trying to tell me something.
Anita, I am...
And the title. How do you account for the title? Young Lady with a Fan. That's what fascinates me. She's the last person in the world you'd expect to have a fan. She's actually wearing a tennis outfit. And she's holding this beautiful, delicately carved ivory fan. How do you like her?
I'm not sure I know what to say.
Tilly, you're so pale. What's wrong?
Maybe I shouldn't tell you anything.
You're so serious. What is it?
The girl...
The girl?
The woman in that painting. It's Alma.
Alma?
Oh, that's right. You couldn't have known her.
Who is Alma?
Well, your husband's first wife. I remember when she posed for that portrait.
Who did you say she was?
Alma. I often wondered what had become of the painting.
Did you say she was Herbert's first wife?
Mm-hmm. And at the time, Herbert didn't like the idea of her posing for Sebastian Corrali. You knew that Herb had been married before. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Well, I just naturally assumed that he would have...
As a matter of fact, now that you mention it, he did tell me.
Anita.
It just slipped my mind for a moment, I guess.
Darling, you don't have to protect everybody all the time against everything.
I can understand why he wouldn't tell me.
Can you?
Herbert is an incurable romantic. We both feel as if our lives really began the day we met, and that nothing in the past is material or relevant or of any importance.
But, dear, your lives didn't begin the day you met, and there was a past, and it did shape your existence.
Tilly.
Yes?
Maybe I shouldn't ask, but...
Mm-hmm. You want to know about Alma?
Yes.
Not nearly as pretty or as charming as you.
Oh, I don't mean that. Where is she now?
Oh. She's, dead.
Dead?
Yes. She was killed.
Oh, how awful.
She was murdered.
She was murdered?
In this room.
No.
She was all alone. Herb was out of town. It was a robbery. Evidently, she'd come home and surprised the thief, or he had surprised her.
Did they ever catch?
No. It remains unsolved.
And you say the place was robbed?
Oh, yes. Everything of value. Jewels, silver.
Did the police ever find any of it?
No.
And it happened right here in this room?
Mm, right here. It's a little scary because the painting was hanging on the wall just where you have it hanging now exactly. It's quite a coincidence.
I suppose you could say the painting saw it all.
In a manner of speaking, you could say that.
The painting is a witness. She actually saw herself being killed.
Anita, really?
Well, it's true, isn't it? You look into those eyes and And they look back into yours and they seem to want to say something.
If they ever do, let me know what. But right now, the important thing about that painting is...
What am I going to do about it?
Yes, what are you going to do about it?
I shouldn't let Herb know.
Why not?
It would be too embarrassing, too painful.
I still say Herbert should have told you he'd been married before.
I only know that Herbert and I are very happy.
All this nonsense about Herb being a romantic. I should think that Herb neglected to tell you something that was very vital.
But it doesn't matter to me.
Oh, sure. The fact is, you're afraid to raise an issue. If you don't want to open up a giant-sized can of worms, you'll just have to get rid of the portrait.
I know, but...
Yes, but...
I think that would be... Don't laugh.
I won't.
I think that would be cruel.
Cruel?
Because she's not just some figment of an artist's imagination.
No, she's not.
She isn't even a strange woman. She was someone who lived here. Who died here. This is her home. How can I throw her out?
It's a rather unique view.
But it's my view.
However, you must do something.
I know. I know, I'll have to think.
You better start thinking right away. It's getting on toward 5 o'clock.
Then, will you please get out of here and give me a chance to collect my thoughts?
Yes, that's certainly what Anita needs. A chance to think and collect her thoughts. Why don't we all give her that opportunity? Why don't you listen to some extremely provocative thoughts on some other important subjects? And I'll bring Anita and her problem back here in just a few moments.
In Chicago, it's 42 degrees at Midway Airport, 45 on the lakefront. The WBBM News Time, 10:48.
Make your hobby happy. Keep your hobby happy when he's a little chubby. He's the happy pappy with Brockenspiel.
There you go. Thank you, Brockenspiel.
We get a nickel for every time Dale plays that.
Yep. Pays for about the first 5 minutes we're on the air. And now a few words from Cactus Cola, says Seth CW, who's in the chat, along with good old Bob and Fogsbane,
who left,
but we'll probably be back shortly.
We had Alan Reed in there early as the auctioneer, and we'll see what other role he comes up with later on here.
That's right. Fred Flintstone. The amazing Fred Flintstone. Powerful voice.
Yes. Very much so. And a good presence there.
Yep. Yeah, boy. And, Coming up on...
Stay away from them pitchers. That's what I say. Wow.
Yeah. All right. Well, next month will be... Wow. It'll be have been 12 years of doing radio every single weekend. 12 years. Next month.
What?
If you include Creepy Castle.
Oh, okay.
That'll be 12 years for me.
Ah, yep. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Wow.
12 years.
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. For a cheerful toast and fill it, happy anniversary. But be careful you don't spill it, happy anniversary. Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
Fred, you remembered.
How could I ever forget the happiest day of my life?
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
Yeah. Well, thanks, fellas, it sure was.
Happy she and happy he, they're both as happy as can be, celebrating merrily their happy anniversary.
And I didn't forget you, darling. Happy anniversary.
A tie with spots on it already. Just what I always needed.
Oh, Fred.
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
All right, fellas. fellas. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Oh, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. We now say emphatically, it's happy anniversary. Not another day could be a happy anniversary. Oh, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy, happy.
Happy,
happy, happy,
happy, happy, happy, happy anniversary. All right,
knock it off. There you go. I needed an excuse to bring that song in. So a little more Fred coming your way. Coming your way from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, the sister, O'Death.
In...
One day, a young lady named Anita Sutliff was very much taken with a painting at an art auction, so she bought it. Immediately after, she discovered by accident that the painting is a portrait of her husband's former wife, Alma. And it seems that Alma had been murdered during a robbery at the house. All this would be shocking enough, but you must also consider one additional fact. Anita didn't know that her husband, Herbert, had been married before.
Penny, for your thoughts, darling.
Oh, my thoughts aren't very deep. I must have been daydreaming.
Oh, about what?
Nothing. Nothing, really.
The fish is excellent, darling.
Thank you. Did you have a hard day?
Oh, they're all hard.
Poor Herb.
Why do people lie all the time? A man says he wants a safe, conservative investment. It's a lie. What he really wants is a stock that will double itself in 6 months and pay a 20% dividend. Tax-free.
Oh, darling, I'm sure people must be more reasonable than that.
When it comes to money, no one's reasonable. Some of the people who walk into my office... No, I must never bring these things home with me.
But, Herb, there's no reason why you shouldn't share.
Darling, this place to me is a citadel. It's where two unusually blessed people live in complete faith and love and harmony. Darling, you do love me, don't you?
No matter how many times you ask, the answer will always be yes.
I look at you and I say, no two people have ever been so close, so completely as one, so open, so free. No secrets between us.
No secrets.
No secrets. Yes, dear?
Would you care for some coffee?
Oh, no, I've had enough.
Oh,
who do you suppose that is?
Probably Tilly.
Tilly? Oh, I'm in no mood for her tonight.
But darling, she's your cousin.
Hi! The door was open. How are things?
I think I have a headache.
Oh, darling, there's some aspirin.
I'll just go upstairs and lie down. Will you excuse me?
I just couldn't stay away.
I'm sure of it.
Has he been upstairs since he came home?
No.
Oh, when he walks into the bedroom, wow.
No, nothing will happen.
But when he sees the painting?
He won't see it. It isn't there.
Anita, you copped out.
No. I decided what was more important.
Okay. But where is the painting?
In the attic.
The attic?
Herb never goes up there, and I can decide what to do about it. Later. But I couldn't decide what to do about it. And the reason was, I'd go up to the attic when Herb was away at the office. And I'd take the painting out from behind a partition where I'd hidden her. And I'd look at it. At this woman. Who had once been to Herb what I am to him now. His wife. And she... would look at me, and at first I thought it was my imagination, but The expression in her eyes would change. I know it's impossible. What's once set down in paint is frozen forever, but her look would change. Sometimes it would be a look of terror. Sometimes it would be a look of concern, and then it would be questioning, as if she wanted to ask me something, or tell me something. Tell me something.
Anita, rush the net quicker. Come on. Oh, that's not the way to hit it. You have to hold the ball.
I really would like to learn to play this stupid game.
Why?
So I could surprise her. It would please him. It would be something else we could do together.
You better rest for a few minutes. You can't learn the game in one day.
All right. Tilly, whatever happened to that artist?
Sebastian Corral?
I heard he went mad. Is he still alive?
I wouldn't know.
How could I find out?
Why?
There's something I want to ask him about the portrait.
What?
How he could manage to make the facial expressions change.
That has nothing to do with him. You're the one who's doing that.
But I tell you, every time I look at that painting...
I know. But you must either confront Herb with the painting...
That word confront...
Or you must get rid of it and put it from your mind.
You make everything sound so grim.
Why do you keep asking about the artist?
I'm just curious. You said Herb didn't like the idea of Alma's posing.
Why? He was jealous. Look, did we come here to play tennis?
How did the painting eventually wind up at the auction? Was it stolen that night?
No. Herb, I guess, couldn't stand the sight of it, so he just got rid of it. He gave it back to Corral.
But why?
I don't know. If you want an answer to most of your questions... You'll just have to ask Herb.
Hello. Remember me?
Who could ever forget you? The young lady who lives so dangerously. Can you imagine $72.50 for a Sebastian Corral?
Would you know him, Corral?
No. One of America's foremost painters. He is not... Or was not, whatever the case may be.
Then you wouldn't know where I could find him.
I bet you're wrong. I know exactly where you can find him.
You do?
Poor lad. He's in the state asylum, and he's bankrupt. Whatever he's got is being sold at auction. I come into it because all he's got is a couple of paintings.
The state asylum.
Yeah, that's how it goes, especially with artists. A painter... He's good, but not really good enough. It drives him crazy. You know why? Because his hand doesn't have the exact skill to put down what he sees in his head.
Thank you, nurse. I see him. Mr. Corral? Hello, Mr. Corral.
Who are you?
I thought we might chat.
I don't know you. What do you want?
I own one of your paintings.
I don't paint anymore.
I like this painting very much. It's called Young Lady with a Fan.
How is Alma?
Alma's...
Oh, don't say that. Don't say she's dead.
But...
Everyone says she is dead. But don't believe it. Alma was just with me. Right now, she's out playing tennis, but we are having dinner together tonight.
You mean you actually see Alma?
Oh, yes. We live here together.
But Alma...
I know. Herb Sutcliffe killed her.
Herb?
But it's all right. She's here now. With me. I don't paint anymore.
Why do you say Herb killed her?
He was jealous. Oh, she hated that fan. And he said, if you won't pose with that fan,
I won't commission the picture.
Why? Why would he say that?
I don't know. He's crazy. Is he dead now, too? It does not matter. So she said, Alma said, I loathe that damn fan. Not paint me in a tennis outfit so it'll look ridiculous.
But what was there about the fan?
I don't know. If you ask me, I think he killed her for the money.
What money?
Who are you?
I just wanted to meet you, Mr. Crowell, and...
Is that my name? Sometimes I forget. Why would you want to meet me? Are you dead, too?
I left him. I went home. I went upstairs to the attic, and I looked at the portrait. The portrait of Alma, the young lady with the fan. And she looked at me, and her eyes were very large, and it seemed that they were brimming with tears. And of course, it was my imagination, but it seemed that those tears were for me. For me. It was almost as if she was speaking to me, telling me something. Telling me to do something. What is it that I'm supposed to do? And then the voice, it was either on her lips or in my brain. And it said, Tannenberg.
Please sit down, ma'am. What can I do for you?
My name is Anita Sutliff.
Sounds familiar. Huh? Let me try to place it.
According to the newspaper reports, 5 years ago...
Yeah. Mrs. Herbert Sutliff was murdered by a burglar. You must be the new Mrs. Sutliff.
I read where Detective Sergeant Tannenberg was the investigating officer.
Yeah, I was on the case. Well, what can I do for you?
Is the case closed, Lieutenant?
Well, no unsolved murder case is ever officially closed. If you mean, is anyone currently working on it, the answer is no. It's inactive.
Oh.
Would you have any new evidence that could merit further active investigation?
No.
Well, then how can the police department help you?
I don't know. I just thought I wanted to find out what had happened there that night. And since you were the police officer...
I assume you read the newspaper accounts?
Yes. I looked up and...
Well, it's all in there. Neighbors thought they heard suspicious noises. We responded, found Mrs. Sutliff dead in her room. There'd been a struggle. Place was cleaned out. We had no leads. That's all I can tell you.
How was she killed?
He shot her.
Oh.
And, I'm afraid I have no more definite information.
A list of things that were taken. Was it given to the police?
Oh, yes. Yeah, and we circulated that list among various places that would buy valuables.
And did anything ever show up?
None of our sources ever reported anything.
Hmm. This list, is it still in existence?
Why do you ask?
I don't know.
Yes, it's still in the files.
Well, I'm sorry I took up so much of your time, Lieutenant.
I hope I've been of service.
Take my advice. Keep away from the police.
Tilly, all I did was ask about the murder.
Why?
Well, it happened in my bedroom. I'm curious.
You should never appear to be curious where there's an unsolved murder.
Why?
Because that, in turn, arouses the curiosity of the police.
But it might do some good if they did become curious.
No, dear. Not if they become curious about you.
Lieutenant Tannenberg. Oh, yeah, Chappie. Yeah, I did call. You remember the Alma Sutliff thing? You and I went out on it 5 years ago. Well, the new wife was just here. And guess what she wanted to know? Is there still a list of the stolen stuff? In other words, is it still hot? Very big, innocent eyes. But she could have been in on it. Well, I checked. He married her 3 months after he buried the first one. How grief-stricken could he have been?
Yes. You go about what you think are your own private and personal affairs, matters which concern nobody but you, and then, without ever being aware of it, you can reach the crucial point where you no longer control the situation. And you have no way of knowing that something you thought was strictly your own business has suddenly and ominously become official business. Official police business. I shall return shortly with Act 3.
Yes, he will, and we'll be giving it to you shortly.
I find odd about this. Usually I'm always interested in the story of the mystery theater. Today I'm much more interested in listening to Alan Reed. That's shame on
yeah.
me. Shame on me.
He's not as obvious in this second part where he picks up.
You heard him in The Auctioneer, but here as the cop, you can tell it, though. You break it down.
Yeah. When he says things or pronounce things a certain way, I know it's him.
Yeah.
And you also have to remember in these old-time radio shows, these actors and actresses are younger than the characters they played when we experienced them in the 60s and 70s.
Exactly. But I'm trying to think. I don't think any of the others did much. Well, I guess they did, because Mel Blanc was all over the place and such. Even thinking here, those that were Hollywood, like Dawes Butler still was active when Sears Radio Theater came along and did several shows with them, some things like that. But mostly they were people who were in Hollywood at the time, the Sears stuff. Alan Reed was in a total of two, and this was 74. So when did he pass? I didn't check. I need to check that out.
He died of emphysema in June 14th, 1977.
Okay, so he could have done more, I guess, if he really wanted to, but he did two episodes. This one from 1974, and I have to check and see when the other one was. But, we don't know when he stopped acting altogether, but pretty much actually once he got the role of Fred Flintstone, that's what he became. He did all those episodes and 36, I think it was 30, 32 or 36 of the Pebbles and Bam Bam show. He did several specials after that as the Flintstones and commercials for the Flintstones. And think of the products they had. They had the vitamins and all kinds of different
The cereals
things that they promoted. Cereals that are still going, right? The Fruity Pebbles and the Chocolate Pebbles and
Fruity Pebbles.
Fruity Pebbles. So, all over the place. But he pretty much remained only a Fred Flintstone once he got the role as Fred.
And were Flintstones not the first, cartoon-shaped vitamin?
A cartoon-shaped vitamins, yeah. They weren't the first chewable, but they were the first cartoon-shaped. You're right.
I believe, yeah.
Could say something about that, but, CW would call right away, so I won't. So.
Oh, yeah. Anyway. She could bring us up to speed on the Weirdlies and other offshoots of the Flintstones, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He was on Johnny Quest, Alan Reed. I did not know that. That makes sense, though. It's another Hanna-Barbera playing various characters in various episodes on Johnny Quest. Very good. Well.
And he had several different dialects and such, so yeah.
Yep. Yep. One of his favorites, or my favorites anyway, is Pasquale on Life of Luigi. Very good with J. Carroll Nash on that show.
And they worked out well together. They really did.
Yeah.
And I heard Alan talking about that, too. He said the thing that killed it, the life with Luigi, was that somebody in the show got blacklisted, and that killed the entire show. This was part of the Hollywood blacklisting. Somebody got blacklisted, and it finished the entire show.
The commie shakedown thing?
Yeah, the McCarthy hearings, yeah.
That's a shame. Too bad. It was a fun show.
It was a very fun show.
I wonder if they took down J. Carroll Nash, because you didn't see much of him.
Yeah, it took a while.
Universal
for him to get back
horror in. Flicks. And,
yeah.
But that was before Luigi.
Yeah.
Find out more about J. Carroll Nash in a future Erie House Radio
show.
Let's get back to Sister of Death, from CBS Radio Mystery.
Wrap it all up.
A relationship between two human beings is an unbelievably complex cradle of attitudes, ideas, privileges. And very early in the game, each person learns that if the relationship is to endure, certain actions must be overlooked. Certain questions must never be asked. Certain boundaries may never be crossed, or else the intricate web will come apart, never to be spun again.
Darling.
Yes?
I think you should see a doctor.
But Herb, I feel fine.
Well, you look so pale lately, and you seem to be so nervous.
I can't imagine why.
Darling, I want you to take care of yourself.
But Herb, I do.
Anita, I love you so much. If anything ever happened to you, I don't know what I'd do.
What could happen to me?
Oh, darling, it's such a crazy world, filled with such mad people. If only we could shut it all out and live by ourselves, for ourselves.
I couldn't keep away from that portrait. She was a stranger, but it was as if she was my sister, because between us was a bond stronger than blood. Our bond was a man, the same man. And so my days were spent more and more in the attic. Herbert would leave. I would go upstairs. I would look at Alma. And she would look at me. And there was communication between us.
Poor Anita.
Why do you say poor Anita? I won't believe it.
Don't let him give you the fan.
The fan?
It means he's ready.
Ready for what?
To kill you.
But he loves me.
He also loved me.
But you had money. I have no money.
You will.
No. I spoke to Corral. Sebastian Corral. You were having an affair with him. And now you're jealous of me.
No.
You're trying to reach out from the grave to destroy Herbert's new marriage.
He'll kill you.
Why?
For your money.
I have no money.
You will.
I was so upset, so terrified, so absolutely distraught. I did something for the first time. I actually went to Herb's office in the middle of a business day.
Feeling better, darling?
Oh, so much better. Your secretary makes excellent coffee. I'm sorry I barged in on you.
Well, I understand that's what husbands are for. Whatever gave you such a fright?
Nothing. Nothing, just nerves.
You must see a doctor.
You're the best doctor. All I need is you.
And all I need is you.
Oh, Herb, I'm so happy when I'm with you. I'm so happy. But I'd better leave so you can sell some stocks and bonds.
Oh, incidentally, what are you doing this afternoon?
Nothing.
Oh, then you can see this doctor.
But I feel fine.
No, this is something else.
Oh?
There's insurance. You know, we have to think about...
Insurance?
Well, my company has a great husband-wife policy. I can get $75,000 worth of life insurance for you attached right onto my own.
But...
Darling, there's no reason why you shouldn't have insurance, is there? Well, is there?
I told you.
But there is no reason why I shouldn't have insurance.
Happy birthday, darling.
Oh, it is my birthday.
Anyone else saying that would sound phony, but I believe you. I actually believe you didn't know it was your birthday.
Darling, the urge to forget becomes stronger as we grow older.
Yes, that's true, but I'm afraid there's something else.
Something else?
These past weeks. You've been so preoccupied.
Have I?
Well, you won't go to a doctor.
But I did. I had my insurance exam. The doctor said I was fine.
Well, this must be a night for pure enjoyment.
Yes, darling.
I have a gift.
Oh, Herb, you shouldn't.
Now, dear, you know you'd have been brokenhearted if I didn't.
That's true.
Here. Go on, open your gift.
Oh, my.
Precious thing I own. It belonged to my mother.
Oh.
Yes, it is breathtaking. It's pure ivory and pearl. The workmanship is fantastic. A fan like this, it's a museum piece.
I...
Well, dear, one of our ancestors was in the China trade back in the clipper ship days. He brought it home. It was supposed to belong to an empress.
I don't know what to say.
Don't say anything. Just give me a kiss.
Can't believe.
Notice each line, each pearl.
I can't believe you.
You will live just long enough to hate that fan.
But why? What does this fan mean? I don't believe it.
One day, he will begin to find fault.
Oh, he doesn't know how.
Little things at first, it will become worse.
I just can't believe.
There were so many things.
Well, hi, stranger. Just in time for a cup of coffee.
Thanks.
How goes it? The portrait still up in the attic?
Yes.
I suppose you know what you're doing.
Tell me, Tilly, you remember the night of the robbery?
Why?
The fan.
What about it?
Was the fan among the things that were stolen?
Why do you ask?
Well, just curious.
Was the fan one of the stolen items? I don't know. Why don't you ask Herb?
It's quite all right, Mrs. Sutliff.
I was in the neighborhood, Lieutenant Tannenberg, and I wondered if I could just take a minute.
We're here to serve you, ma'am.
Well, there's an heirloom. It has sentimental value for my husband, and he isn't sure if it was one of those things that were stolen during the robbery.
Well, he has the list. He can check it.
Well, you see, it was a long time ago, and the list has been lost or misplaced.
Oh. Well, in that case, let's look at the one we have. As a matter of fact, I have the file right here on my desk.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
You mean the police are opening up?
No, we just have a periodic review of all the records. Here we are, Sutliff, Alma, list of stolen items. Here it is. Fan, antique quality Chinese pearl and ivory. Yeah, this must be it.
Then it was stolen.
Well, according to what Mr. Sutliff attested to at the time, yes, it was part of the loot.
Thank you, Lieutenant. Thank you very much.
The chicken is a bit underdone.
But I made it the same way.
And it's tough.
Tastes the same as usual.
Now, dear, it's not that you have very much to do all day. You could at least take time and prepare a decent meal.
Herbert, what are you saying?
I'm telling you that dinner has been just thrown together as if...
You never found any fault with my cooking before.
You never gave me reason to.
Herb, this is no way to talk to me.
You have a lot to learn.
Herbert, what's gotten into you?
This meal is unfit to eat. I'll have my dinner at a restaurant.
Herbert!
And I shall have my dinner out every night until you learn how to cook properly.
I don't believe it. It's a dream.
What's a dream, Anita?
All of it. You and the way Herbert just spoke to me. It's a dream.
Is the fan also a dream? The
Darling.
Hello, Herbert. You know Alma.
Anita.
Why didn't you tell me about Alma?
Because I didn't want to remember. Because if you try to put something out of your mind completely, then, well, after a while, it doesn't exist.
Why did you kill her?
I had to. She came home. I didn't expect her. She found me at the safe. Her money had come, her inheritance, innegotiable bonds. And I needed them because I was short. But she wouldn't listen.
And that's why you killed her?
But she brought it on herself. It was her fault. Where are you going?
Away from here.
No. No, don't leave me.
Please, Herb.
I thought you were different. But you're like all women. You can't be trusted.
Please,
you'll
let
go to the police,
me.
Won't you?
Yes.
I knew I couldn't trust you. Let me tell you what's going to happen to you. Shut up! See? You have a little workroom up here. You do things with art and sewing. You must have taken a nap. And while you were smoking, a terrible thing happened. You must have fallen asleep.
I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Lieutenant.
Who are you? What are you doing here?
I'm a police officer. You must remember me. Now, Mr. Sutliff, will you come quietly?
I didn't do anything.
You take him down, Chappie.
I didn't do anything.
Could I just sit down for a minute?
I guess I was wrong about you. I thought you and he killed his first wife and were waiting for things to cool down.
I didn't even know he was married.
Then how did you know he killed her?
She told me.
Who told you?
She did. Look at her.
That's just a painting.
Is it?
As a matter of fact, I remember that was in the bedroom where we found the body. Corral. That's the artist's name. Yeah, I remember. I read in the paper the guy went nuts because he felt he wasn't good enough.
On the other hand, he may have been too good.
What does a painter put in a portrait? Who knows? You hear it said of a particular good likeness that the artist captured his subject. Can that be taken literally? Take me literally when I tell you. I'll be back shortly. So many people are like Anita Sutcliffe. So many men and women who say, don't rock the boat. Don't make waves. Don't open a can of worms. And yet, so typical. Aren't most of us desperately anxious to preserve what we have at any cost? And isn't it the saddest truth that many of us would rather live in a fool's paradise than a wise man's hell? Our cast included K.T. Stevens, Amzie Strickland, Alan Reed, and Brett Morrison. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
Now, a preview of our next tale.
I take him to school.
Sorry, partner.
But I wanted to show Clancy Williams.
Unlatch that belt, pale face, or I'll use it to make your other end red. Better get on your horse.
Bye, Mom. I love you.
I love you too, Billy boy. Guns. What place do they have in our life? Or anyone's? Why does the back door bell always ring when you're at the front? Coming. All right, all right. What's so important? Yes?
Hello, wife. Long time no see.
Who are you? What do you... Well, it could be...
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre.
Macabre.
Until next time, pleasant dreams.
So you say.
Chicago. Two rights don't make a wrong, but two lefts make a U-turn. And so that is not an oral. But
that is not.
There is one coming up. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story, not written by Gar.
Apologies to Gar. Sometimes, no matter how hard you try, you just can't get an ex-wife to shut up. That's it.
Oh, this is awful.
Thank you, Gar.
There you go. A multifaceted response. Yeah, you got a triple soundbite there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Dale, I think we have no choice at this point before we go into the extra bonus material to bring us the latest adventure of the greatest inventor of all time, Ugg the Caveman.
Hmm. Seems like there should be some music for this occasion. Here we go. And now, Ugg.
Although we can't claim ownership of the wheel, we owe the first practical application of the wheel to the greatest inventor of all time, Ugg the Caveman. Now, at this point in time, the wheel had been in existence for a decade, but it seemed a lot longer. It seemed longer because there were no calendars, so no one knew how to measure length of time. Oh, sure, they could count full moons, but with 12 full moons in a year, and being that cavemen had a short attention span, halfway through the second year, they would lose count and have to start counting moons all over again. Learning to count days or sun rotations, as cavemen termed them, the counting moons would come many years later when Pug the Cave Criminal would mark the wall with pieces of charred wood for each day he was incarcerated so he would know how many days he was in prison. This came about because a friend of his, Snatch, was incarcerated for 45 days, but since he was in the middle of a moon cycle, no one knew how to count it. So his 45 days turned into a 37-month stretch.
Hmm?
Getting back to the wheel, it had been invented by Mattock, the cave inventor from several cave clans away. The problem with Mattock's original wheel was that it was unusable. The reason it was unusable was because the stone wheel was square. You could try to push or pull it, but it never turned onto the next side, so there it sat for 10 years. And 10 years is 120 full moon cycles, which is practically a lifetime in caveman days. The need for the wheel was because cave people, Wed and Bliss, had just tied the knot, and they needed to move into the almost married cave. By moving into the almost married cave, it was a neutral cave that wasn't his or hers. See, they weren't actually married yet, even though they had tied the knot. During caveman days, if a man and woman intended to get married, they knotted a four-foot vine to each other and would stay that way for a full moon cycle. This way, they would see the best and worst of each other. If the vine stayed intact at the end of that cycle, they were considered married. If the vine were broken off, so was the engagement. Now, Webb stated that if they were to survive the moon cycle engagement, she would move into Bliss's cave, but only if she could have her stone wardrobe moved there. Now, Bliss appeared appealed to Ugg to figure out how to move this stone wardrobe to his cave, which was all the way across the compound and was much too heavy to be carried by the cavemen, and he only had one moon cycle to accomplish it. Considering this, Ugg decided that he would need the wheel to help him move the stone wardrobe if he could make the wheel work. So Ugg traveled past the land of the tar pits land and the land of sand traps to see if the wheel could be used to help pull things. Mattock was very old by this time, as he was nearly 30, and agreed to let Ugg make his alteration to the wheel, and if it worked and went to market, they would split the sparking stone's profit. Ugg chiseled the edges down, and the wheel was then able to roll. Ugg then chiseled the second wheel and placed it on the each end of a platform so heavy things could be moved more easily. Ugg thanked Mattock and began his journey back to his own cave compound, pulling the wheel platform. The trip only took him one sun rotation to get to Mattock's compound, but it would take him four sun rotations to return, having getting stuck twice in the land of the sand trap and two extra rotations to get through the tar pits land. Moving through the tar pits land put layers of tar on the wheel, making it extra hard to pull. But as Ugg was leaving the tar pits, the tar on the wheel started to picking up leaves of Phanarius tree, which stuck to the wheel. and the leaves packed on and became part of the wheel. The platform started moving faster and smoother than before. And with the padding on its wheel, it was a cinch to transfer the stone wardrobe across the compound to Bliss's cave with several sun rotations to spare. It was at this point that Maddox's wheel was transformed into the tire. Now, over the years, the tire would become modified by many materials it was made from, but it always came at the same design, a wheel covered with a substance that would make the wheel move faster and smoother. So as you're driving down the highways and byways at speeds which exceed the speed limit, just take a moment to thank Ugg and his new Matic tire for getting you where you are today and giving Ugg his due as the greatest inventor of all time. That's it.
Yes, it was all a bad dream.
It was a bad dream.
It was a bad dream. That was a good dream. That was another great episode of Ugg. Well,
yes, indeed. He wanted to be here. He wanted to be here in time for, you know, Fred Flintstone's show to take care of that.
Yep. Well, I think we ought to head on over to the wheel.
Hey, Barney, okay. Let's go, pal.
Heading on over to the wheel.
Yep.
And, I don't know, I guess maybe since I brought it up, I'll do the spinning. Why not?
There you go.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Monongahela Metal Foundry, maker of extra shiny steel ingots for home and office use, invites you to ride with the men of Squad Car 119.
My name's Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., we're the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes we go around corners, sometimes straight ahead. Either way, we keep on the lookout for trouble. The other evening, I just pulled a squad car over the curb, shut off the engine, when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger Jr., turned to me and said,
"Why'd you pull over to the curb and shut off the engine, Sam?"
"Kind of quiet tonight, so I thought we might catch a little nap before we have to check in with headquarters."
"See, I can't sleep when it's this hot and humid, Sam. My shirt sticks to me, and I get too uncomfortable to doze off."
"Yeah, well, why don't you just lean back and rest your eyes then, Ralph Jr.?"
"No, that's no good. Leaning back just makes my shirt stick to the car seat, and that's even worse."
"Yeah, that's too bad. I think I could really doze off if you'd just pipe down, Ralph."
"I'm sorry, Sam. Never been able to relax in sticky clothes when it's hot and humid."
"Yeah.
I don't even wear pajama tops until after Labor Day."
"Yeah, well, when it's hot and humid like that."
"Calling Car 119, Car 119. Investigate a man behaving suspiciously in the drugstore at Pico and Olympic." "That's the drugstore at Pico and Olympic."
"Ah, drugstore at Pico and Olympic, huh?"
"That's us, Sam. Let's roll."
"Gee, look at that temperature gauge, Ralph R. Jr. It's almost up to boiling."
"Must be a broken fan belt. I'd be willing to bet on it. Better turn off the engine and have a look, Sam."
"Yeah. Maybe just registered hot because the water wasn't circulating while we were parked there."
"No, I'd be willing to bet it's a broken fan belt. Careful now when you open the hood, Sam. The steam could come right up and hit you in the face."
"Yeah. Doesn't seem to be boiling over. I'll lean in and check the fan belt."
"Careful when you stick your head in there, Sam. You could bang it on the hood and get a nasty gash."
"Yeah, fan belt's okay. Maybe we're just low on water."
"Be careful if you plan to take off that radiator cap, Sam. Hot water could spill out all over your hands there."
"Yeah, if it did, you could get a nasty burn."
"Calling Car 119, Car 119. Disregard that call to investigate a man behaving suspiciously in the drugstore at Pico and Olympic. The case has been handled by the men of Squad Car 24. The suspect has been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial."
And while we wait to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's good news for you homemakers. You're well aware, I'm sure, that extra shiny steel ingots have been in short supply this season at your Monongahela Metal Foundry showroom. But now we're happy to say the supply is nearly caught up with the tremendous demand. Oh, you may still encounter a limit of 3 ingots to the customer in some scattered areas, but in most places, your Monongahela agent will be happy to sell you as many as you need to replace those old, worn-out ingots you've been forced to use during the shortage. So stock up today while there's a good selection.
The suspect arrested in that drugstore at Pico and Olympic was convicted on 5 counts of behaving suspiciously. Behaving suspiciously in a drugstore is punishable by a term in the state penitentiary of not less than 20 years or more than life.
And so another desperate criminal is brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night.
Okay, that's Bob and Ray.
Yep. Not less than 20 years and not more than life. I like that line.
Not more than life.
Yep.
Oh, my. Funny as that may sound, some people have gotten sentences that would certainly be longer than a life.
Yeah, that's true. They have like two lifetime spans to be spent concurrently. So that means, wow, they got to live two times, you know?
Yep. Speaking of reincarnation,
yes.
I have a theory.
You have a theory?
Yes. The last stop in the wheel of reincarnation, is a dog.
Okay.
It's a dog. The last thing you will be is a dog. Because a dog doesn't have to learn anything. They
right.
know everything they need to know.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
They don't have to learn anything. Yep. They're perfect creatures in my estimation. They are wise.
If you would like to, and I don't have the thing right in front of me, but if you would like to hear a story we aired on reincarnation, go back to the CBS Radio Mystery Theater Appointment in Uganda that we shared many moons ago. And it is there in the archives, as is all the others, pretty much for now.
For now.
For now.
It's going away, kids. It'll take a while. It's an incredible library, and we want to catalog it and do other things with it when we slam the door behind us. He said boldly. Hey, what the hell? I'm paying for it. What can they do? Take away my birthday.
That's right. Better not do that. You're trying to collect your Medicare thing, you know? Come on.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
Yep. Well, we got to do this some more, this Eerie House thing. So, next weekend. We're on a bad trip, man. You think 420 was bad, hey? We're on a bad trip. That's right. Trip's gone awry, apparently. Arch Obler's plays, Crisis, and Theater 5. And then on Saturday, it'll be another CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Hopefully, both will be scheduled appropriately.
They will. They will. I have
the appropriate amount of time.
I have confidence in the scheduler.
We lost good old Bob and Fogsbane along the way. I think they ran on over to the Twitches to catch a vault.
They ran over to the Garth. Yeah, we had a brand new old show, and they went to a rerun. Well, I'm partially appalled by that.
My little few ears are
Garth. Yeah, but you know,
it's Garth.
It's Garth, so therefore, I do forgive them, you know.
And they're no need to forgive. We love them, guys. They're always here. And CW, thanks for riding it out with us. Sorry you couldn't join us since you are forced into servitude. as we all are, I think, in one way, shape, or form or another. Well, Dave, I guess we're going to have to split on out of here.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I really must get some sleep now. Night, night.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And just him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone. Can you dig it?
Cash register. Do we make money or something?
We owe more now.
Ah, that wouldn't surprise me. Well, that was fun.
There we go.
Those Flintstones.
I'm surprised you didn't pull out the theme song for that.
That's the thing I think I feel worst of for kids today, is they will not have the experience of Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah.
And what a thrill that was for us to just wait, you know, all week until the weekend and you catch your cartoons.
I tell you what, Dale, I was never, ever, ever in my life an early riser, except on Saturday morning when I would get up and they'd have the educational films on before the cartoons came on. And here's Farmer Bob. He's plowing his field.
Farmer Bob.
That was the only morning I could force myself out of bed earlier than I ever had to. That was because it was Saturday morning and cartoon time. And you're right, there was nothing like that. And as it progressed, then there were more live action shows in there because they're probably cheaper to produce than the animated ones were. And
yeah,
and before you knew it, they were gone. Kids' news shows, and then it was just all gone.
I just couldn't get down with H.R. Puff and stuff, man. It just wasn't working for me.
Well, I could live with H.R. Puff and stuff. It had Charles Nelson Reilly, so.
Again. No, I'm kidding. Come on now. Easy. Oh, it was fun. No, he was great. I loved him on Match Game a lot? He was on one of the game shows.
He was on Match Game a lot, yeah. He was also a regular on the one or two seasons of The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, the television. It was kind of a sitcom by that point. So he was a regular on that. And I'm trying to think what else he was a regular on.
Peggy's
more of a Broadway type guy than a lot of other things, but I thought he was a talent and also a writer. So,
oh, absolutely, and a wit. He was one of those that could come
he
up
was a
with
wit.
Stuff
yeah,
lately.
Yes, he did. And I think he kind of joined the Match Game thing where Richard Jawson just was appalled by it by a certain point, you know.
Yeah.
And,
well, he moved on to bigger and better things as far as game shows.
Yeah, he was still contracted to that when Family Feud picked up. And Gene Rayburn finally went to him and said, look, if you hate it that much, let's leave. We'll make it, you know, but go ahead and leave. And so he did, and he was much happier. For some reason, he didn't like, maybe because he was the focal point because everybody wanted to match with Richard, you know?
Yes. Yeah, to find out what he was going to come up with.
But he was on
plus,
the, you know, of course.
Pretty
he was
smart.
He was. And very grounded because he could come up with the same answers many of the people who weren't quite as smart but who were panelists were. And, of course, he
but
did.
But I meant smart in terms of human
and
nature. He could figure people out what they're probably likely to answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Could be. But yeah, and then he did, of course, was regular on Hogan's Heroes. He was supposed to be the focal point, but they couldn't really understand what he was saying sometimes. That's when they brought Bob Crane in to be the lead there. But he certainly was a big part of that. And then, of course, he was even in the new Dick Van Dyke show when Dick went out and was doing the show in Arizona with Hope Lang.
Yep.
He was a regular in that. So much fun.
It's amazing the webs of who's connected to what and whom, and it all ends up with Kevin Bacon. Somewhere in there it ends up with Kevin Bacon.
It does. Just so many degrees, and you're right there.
Amazes me.
Yeah, because you didn't really, when you think of it, you don't think that Kevin Bacon really did all that much, but apparently he has, because he's not that far connected from just about anybody in Hollywood.
Well, they say on Earth.
Oh, on Earth, okay.
6 degrees, yeah, 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon for everybody. Maybe 7 degrees.
Maybe seven. But, yeah.
No, but you've met influential people, Dave, who have met other influential people. So I bet you are easily within 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Maybe. I don't know. I've never figured the connection, but one of these days, maybe I will.
Well, it may be remote. All right. So you've worked with Big Chuck. Now, right there, there's a lot of famous people that he's interacted with.
Yeah, there is, and a lot of people came on the show and did skits with, yes, yeah.
Amazingly famous people came. Didn't Muhammad Ali come on there?
Muhammad Ali and, was it Buddy Epson and, boy, I'm trying to think of all the other ones, that, you know, that have been on the show that were part of, you know, other shows that just were coming by as a promo and end up being on the show, you know, in a sketch.
Yeah, or somebody that was locally visiting in town and they would get in there and get them.
Yeah.
Funny that they had Muhammad Ali. He wasn't particularly connected to Cleveland that I know of.
Not that I know of, no.
Yeah. Funny. But see, in one of those, can't be too far from Kevin Bacon. Dave, I'm telling you, you're 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon.
Well, I'll have to work on my math, so.
Yep. Hey, I'm not that far from the Beatles. I worked with a ghoul who, when he was young,
snuck
in and took those Beatles. So I'm only 2 degrees away from there.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
Yeah, he got those tickets because they gave him to Ernie Anderson. He didn't want them, so.
Yeah.
So Ron took them. So Ron took them.
That's right.
And actually got to meet the Beatles.
Yeah, and there's some amazing footage he had in his collection that local radio would request to borrow from time to time when they were running a feature about the Beatles or whatever, especially if they're talking about the early days. Because that was very early when they came to Cleveland in
it
their
was.
Careers.
Very early.
Yep. Pretty amazing stuff when you think about it. Look at how small the world got since we were young, Dave.
Oh, you know, well, you just think of the whole horror hosting world. See, I didn't have any in Buffalo, and look at all the ones you had here, but everybody thought that who they had was all there was. Nobody knew that Chicago had their own and, you know, Virginia had their own and all that kind of stuff. And the internet made that such a smaller community, but larger community at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Because first of all, you had people collecting information on the other cities, people like Dr. Goldfinger and my former partner and others, Chris Corpse. He was a good historian on horror hosts, as is, what's his name? He works with the Baron down in Cincinnati, Southern Ohio, Dayton area.
Okay. Yeah.
Slipping my mind. I'm getting senile, Dave. I'm telling you.
Baron Von Porkchop.
Baron Von Porkchop, his producer.
Yeah.
Cousin is a great chronicler of horror hosts. Nice enough to do a feature on me a long time ago.
Very cool.
Nice. Yeah, when I was more active. Doing Amherst City Cable, and then later on my own.
Yeah.
I'll be back. I'll be back one of these days before I croak. Get out there one more time. Yep. Got things to do with Erie House here, though. We're going to move, gang. Pretty sure we know where. We'll announce when we're closer. And I guess, Dave, we probably ought to call it a night.
We should. It's a night. And with that, we can turn off the house lights, turn on the three spotlights, so into the middle spotlight, the one, the only James Durante can step into.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodles.
We the thing, and
Inca-tinka-doo, yeah.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
You're about 200 years old now.
Oh.